Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narotamam. Devim Sarsvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayo Mudirayet. Nasta Praeshu Apadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavad Yuchamashloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. By regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is practically destroyed, and thus loving service to the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental song, is established as an irrevocable fact. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer our humble obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Today we're studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, Texts 14 and 15. These are continuing to hear from the residents of Jambudweep as they offer prayers to their respective deities on the planets that they're on. So I'll just read the Sanskrit and the English of verse 14. There's no purport, and then we'll go to text 15. Tasmat rajo raga vishadamanyu manaspriha bhayanain jadi mulam hitvagriham samshruti chakravalam nishinghapadam bhajata katobhayam iti. Sometimes it's said that when you say Sanskrit prayers, you're in ecstasy, so you might lose track of the meter. I think that's what happened here, because there's no way that you can fit it in. So this is the conclusion of Prahlad Maharaj's prayers to Nrisimhadev. Very beautiful. He's not even directly addressing it to Nrisimhadev, he's addressing it to his family members. It says, therefore, O demons. But you have to keep in mind that the demons are proud of being demons. If you call someone a demon, usually they feel like it's an insult, but the demons are proud of their race. So, therefore, O demons, give up the so-called happiness of family life and simply take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Nrisimhadev, which are the actual shelter of fearlessness. Entanglement in family life is the root cause of material attachment, indefatigable desires, moroseness, anger, despair, fear, and the desire for false prestige, all of which result in the repetition of birth and death. All of you who've gone through family life here, I don't know if it resonates with you. At least I'm sure some of it does. Let's see. Attachment. Indefatigable desires. So many desires. Moroseness. It means sadness, anger, despair, fear, and the desire for false prestige. Not only that, on top of that, you get to take birth again and again. So it's important that we understand this properly. I'm not saying that I really understand it properly, but family life embodies attachment for material enjoyment. Of course, in Kali Yuga, family life is so flickering that you think, well, I don't have a problem because I don't have a family. But it's not like that. It means family life, at least in the times that the Bhagavad was spoken, meant there was a life that was structured. Now life is less structured, but the idea, as long as we're attached to the body and who we think are our bodily relatives, and we invest everything in that, then we're going to be prone to all of these problems. Of course, when one advances in spiritual life, everything comes into perspective, and we'll hear more about that in the next verse. So the next verse is the prayers that are offered to Kamadev. Kamadev is, we'll hear more about a very interesting deity. Sanskrit is very long, I'll read it, but there's no verse on the bird, so I'll just read it. Ketumale pi bhagavan kamadeva swarupena lakshmiya priya chikirsaya prajapater duhir duhitrinam putranam tadvarsha patinam purushaya yushaho ratra parishankhya nanam yasam garbha maha purusha Mahastra Teja Sod Vegeta Manasam Vidvashita Vyasava Sam Vartasha Arante Vinipatanti. Shukadev Goswami continued, in the tract of land called Ketumala Varsha, Lord Vishnu lives in the form of Kamadev. Only for the satisfaction of his devotees. These include Lakshmiji, the goddess of fortune, the Prajapati Samvatsara, and all of Samvatsara's sons and daughters. Very interesting family you're going to hear about here. The daughters of Prajapati are considered the controlling deities of the nights. And his sons are considered the controllers of the days. The Prajapati's offspring number 36,000, one for each night and each day in the lifetime of a human being. At the end of each year, the Prajapati's daughters become very agitated upon seeing the extremely effulgent disk of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus they all suffer miscarriages. It means they must never have any children if it's at the end of every year. So who remembers anything about this verse? Very interesting. Abstract information. Should I read it again? Well, I think some of it will go in again if I read it again. Okay, try to pay attention because I'll ask you again, okay? This is a planet. When we talk about planet here, got the real one, eh? Thank you. I thought one was for the ladies and one was for the gents. Thank you, Manjara. This is a. As far as I understand, there's different varshas. If you look at the planetary systems from a different dimension, it's like islands, right? Islands in space. So this is the Ketumala Varsha. Shukadev Goswami, we had just heard from the Varsha on which Prahlad Maharaj dwells and how he's been offering prayers to the presiding deity there, which is Lord Narsingadev. Now we're hearing about Ketumala Varsha. And this is where the devotees of Kamadev live. So who knows who Kamadev is? When you hear the word Kamadev, who do you think of? Yes, Cupid. Very interesting personality. Quite an interesting discussion we'll have about him. Okay, so try to hear now. I know it's not easy, but this is quite abstract, but try to get a visual picture of this. Shukadeva Goswami continued, in the tract of land called Ketumala Varsha, Lord Vishnu lives in the form of Kamadev, only for the satisfaction of his devotees. So he's just there because his devotees love him so much. Amazing. These devotees include, who remembers one of the main devotee there? Who's the main servant of Lord Vishnu? She's always with him. Lakshmiji, the goddess of fortune. You saw the picture outside where there's Lakshmi sitting with Vishnu, and then there's all the other four armed forms of Vishnu is looking up and worshipping him. The ladies are playing all these beautiful instruments. And there's one four-armed devotee who's got his arm around his wife. See all the beautiful flowers? It looks pretty sublime. So it's, I guess that the atmosphere must be a little bit like that there. Okay, so this includes Lakshmiji. These include Lakshmiji, the goddess of fortune, and the Prajapati Samvatsara. So there's a Prajapati there, which means one who produces many living entities. And he has all of his daughters and sons. So who remembers anything about the daughters and the sons? They're extraordinary. Who do they represent? The daughters represent the knights. And the sons? And how many of them are there? And why are there 36,000? In the life of a human being, right? Yeah. So at the end of each year, so I'm a little bit confused if this is a human being's year or their years, it's confusing. But at the end of each year, who remembers what happens? Yeah, why do they have miscarriages? Somehow it seems that the disc of the Lord makes itself visible. And the disc of the Lord is capable of destroying the entire universe, so I guess it would make you a little nervous. Anyway, it's quite. When I was reading this, I was thinking, yeah, it's not easy, as they say, to wrap your head around it, but very interesting information. So the purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. This Kamadev, who appears as Krishna's son named Prajumna, is Vishnu Tattva. How this is so is explained by Madhvacharya. So Madhvacharya is the first Acharya who contested Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya said, everything's one. And Madhvacharya said, no, everything's different. Of course, we know that Lord Chaitanya took all this oneness and difference and synthesized it in a perfect way. Because there was oneness, and then there was difference, and then there's purified oneness, and then there's so many acharyas came after to fine-tune the understanding of the relationship between the Lord and His energies. So finally, Lord Chaitanya brought the inconceivable one and difference of the Lord with all His different energies. But this is Madhvacharya. So he says, he quotes from the Brahmanda Purana, Kama Devas Ditam Vishnam Vishnum Upasate. Oh no, Upaste. Although this Kamadev is Vishnu Tattva, his body is not spiritual but material, which is quite interesting. Lord Vishnu as Pradyumna or Kamadev accepts a material body, but he still acts spiritually. This is kind of unusual for us. We don't think of Vishnu with a material body. It's something that... So this is an unusual category. It does not make any difference whether he accepts a spiritual or a material body. He can act spiritually in any condition of existence. Mayavadi philosophers regard even Lord Krishna's body as material. But their opinions cannot impede the spiritual activity of the Lord. So I did some research on this to try to give it some kind of a place in our mind. And let's see what, you know, I hope it's interesting for you. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unlitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual master is forcing open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. Can I ask a favor? Can this be taken with me? I can use this instead. If you could take this and be careful. I could move it because it's between me and the rest of the audience. Thank you, dear. So does anybody remember a little bit the history of Kamadev? Kamadev is called Ananga. Why is she called Ananga? It had something to do with his bothering Lord Shiva. Okay, I'll read a little bit about this. Yes, yes. Yeah, that's what happened. Of Krishna, he became. He merged into the body of Prajumna. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Not just somebody, but anyway, you've definitely got the line of the story. So thank you. So we'll go through this. We'll start with in Canto 2 of the Bhagavatam, in the chapter called Scheduled Incarnations of the Lord, we hear about Pradyumna, or about Kamadev. Great stalwarts like Lord Shiva can, by their wrathful, their angry glances, overcome lust and vanquish him. Yet they cannot be free from the overwhelming effect of their own wrath. So that was a disqualification for Lord Shiva that he became angry like that. Such wrath can never enter into the heart of the Lord, who is above all this. So how can lust take shelter in his mind? So then we hear the story here. If I remember correctly, there was a problem in the universe because the demigods were being conquered by the demons. And the demigods were told, if I remember correctly, by Lord Brahma, that the only way that they can overcome the danger of being conquered by the demons was if they could convince Lord Shiva to father a son who would then be the commander-in-chief of the demigods. So at that time, Lord Shiva was engaged in tapasya because he had lost his wife, Sati, and he thought, okay, I'm going into the Himalayas. But it was a desperate situation, so they were trying different ways to get Lord Shiva to come out of his mode of tapasya so that he could father a son. When Lord Shiva was engaged in severely austere meditation, Cupid, the demigod of lust, threw his arrow of sex desire. Lord Shiva, thus being very angry at him, glanced at Cupid in great wrath. And at once the body of Cupid was annihilated. Although Lord Shiva was so powerful, he was unable to get free from the effects of such wrath. Then we hear about how Lord Vishnu was transcendental to all lust, which is an important principle for us because we'll be hearing more later about how no one can resist Cupid unless they take shelter of the Lord. So then from another place in the Bhagavatam, from Canto 8, Chapter 12, Text 15 in the purport, we hear, Lord Shiva is not an ordinary person. He cannot be bewildered even by the most beautiful woman. Cupid himself tried to invoke Lord Shiva's lusty desires in the presence of Parvati. Yes, Parvati was coming there to worship him. She was offering flowers. Lord Shiva was sitting naked, so she was offering flowers to what is we know as Shiva Linga, which is the genital of the Lord. And normally speaking, that would be quite disturbing for a man who's trying to meditate. But they had to employ the help of Cupid. And Cupid, he got it. But Lord Shiva was never agitated. Cupid himself tried to invoke Lord Shiva's lusty desires in the presence of Parvati, but Lord Shiva was never agitated. It's interesting because here now we hear a different angle. He wasn't even agitated by anger. Rather, the blazing fire from Lord Shiva's eyes turned Cupid to ashes. So this is in relation to the story when Lord Shiva asked Vishnu if he could see the Mohini form, because apparently when the Lord manifested that form, Shiva wasn't present. So he was thinking, they all got to see it, but I didn't, and he wanted to see it. Therefore, Lord Vishnu had to think twice about what kind of beautiful form would bewilder even Lord Shiva. It's interesting because we also hear in another place where Prabhupada says that that Haridas Thakur was more advanced than Lord Shiva, because when Parvati asked to engage try to attract Lord Shiva, he agreed to the proposal. So it seems that there's different angles on these stories in different parts of the Bhagavatam according to which point the acharyas are trying to not enforce, but to emphasize. Okay, so from chapter 10, canto 10, chapter 55, text 2, Shukadeva Goswami said, Kamadev, Cupid, an expansion of Vasudev, had previously been burned to ashes by Rudra's anger. Now, to obtain a new body, he merged back into the body of Lord Vasudev. So now we hear the whole story, which you were mentioning before, which is really interesting. In his Krishna Sandarbha, Anucheda 87, Srila Jiva Goswami cites the following verse of the Gopala Tapani Upanishad to prove that the Prajumna who is the son of Krishna and Rukmini is the same Prajumna who is a member of Lord Krishna's eternal fourfold plenary expansion. So we know there's Krishna, there's Balaram, and then from Balaram expands Sankarshan, and from Sankarshan expands Narayan, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. So that apparently this Kamadev is a member of this particular expansion. Then the verse that's quoted by Srila Jiva Goswami, if I remember, yeah, I think it's Yatrasau Samstita Krishnas Tribi Shakya Samahita Ram Aniruta Prajumnai Rukminya Sahito Vibhu. There in Dwarka, the Almighty Lord Krishna, endowed with his full potency, resided in the company of his three plenary expansions, Balaram, Aniruddha, and Prajumna. The Krishna Sandarbha goes on to explain, with reference to the present verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the Cupid whom Rudra burned up with his anger is a demigod subordinate to Indra. That's original Cupid. This demigod Cupid is a partial manifestation of the prototype Cupid, Prajumna, who is a plenary expansion of Vasudev. The demigod Cupid, being unable to obtain a new body on his own, entered within the body of Prajumna. Otherwise, Cupid would have had to remain in a perpetual state of disembodiment. So what does that mean, if one is in a perpetual state of disembodiment? Yeah, like one's like a ghost. A result of Rudra's having incinerated him with his anger. So now we hear the story of this lady who was married to Prajumna. Her name was Rati. So this is from 10:55:8. Mayavati was, and she was working in the kitchen of this, she ended up having to work in the kitchen of this demon. It's an interesting story how this happened. Mayavati was in fact Cupid's renowned wife, Rati. While waiting for her husband to obtain a new body, so they're pretty transcendental, your husband dies, well, I'll just have to wait till he gets a new body. His previous one having been burnt up, she had been assigned by Shambhara, this is the demon, to prepare vegetables and rice. Mayavati understood that the infant was actually Kamadev, and thus she began to feel love for him. So this, as you said, this Prajumna was captured by this demon. Because he understood that Pradyumna was ultimately to kill him. So he figured, I'll just throw him in the ocean and he'll drown or he'll get eaten by a fish. That was his calculation. And he did that. But because it's all part of Krishna's transcendental lila, this Pradyumna was swallowed by a fish. And this fish ended up in Sambhara's kitchen. And of course, she was cooking vegetables and rice, but somehow or other she got to know that when the cook who did the meat and fish stuff cut open this big fish, that there was a child inside. And because this cook said, well, what am I going to do with this child? He gave the child to Mayavati. Far out. Okay. So then we'll hear some other interesting information in the purport. Very interesting. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti explains the story as follows. When Cupid's body was burned to ashes, Rati worshipped Lord Shiva to obtain another body for Cupid. Shambhara, having also come to Shiva for a benediction, was recognized by the Lord first, who told him, "You should now ask for your benediction." Shambhara, struck with lust at seeing Rati, replied that he wanted her as his benediction. So she was worshipping Lord Shiva to get her husband back, but Shambhara, the demon, wanted her for his wife. It reminds me of a song that we heard when I was growing up. It was called "I'm My Own Grandpa." It was a funny song about how a man married some widow, and then his father married the son of that the daughter of that widow. So he's like it was a joke. So, but you see these kind of interrelated, kind of complex family relationships in the Bhagavatam that are like kind of hard to wrap your head around. So Shambhara, struck with lust at seeing Rati, replied that he wanted her as his benediction, and Shiva complied, "Yes, yes, you can have her." Lord Shiva then consoled the sobbing Rati. She was like bawling her eyes out because she didn't want to go with this guy, telling her, "Go with him, and in his very home you will attain what you desire." Thereupon Rati, bewildered, because she's not an ordinary person, so she managed to keep the guy over here by her bewildering potency. Thereupon Rati bewildered Shambhara with her deluding power, and taking the name Mayavati, remained in his home untouched. So although he was lusty after her, he couldn't ravish her because she had some potency to bewilder him. So she just ended up as a cook in his kitchen. It is said that Cupid, who is directly part and parcel of Lord Vasudeva and who was formerly burned to ashes by the anger of Lord Shiva, took birth from the womb of Rukmini, begotten by Krishna. This is Kamadev, a demigod of the heavenly planets, especially capable of inducing lusty desires. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has many grades of parts and parcels. But the quadruple expansions of Krishna, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha are directly in the Vishnu category. Kama, or the Cupid demigod, who later took his birth from the womb of Rukmini, was also named Pradyumna. But he cannot be the Pradyumna of the Vishnu category. Just to confuse you a little bit more. He belongs to the category of Jiva Tattva, but for exhibiting special power in the category of demigods, he was a part and parcel of the super prowess of Pradyumna. That is the verdict of the Goswamis. Therefore, when Cupid was burned to ashes by the anger of Lord Shiva, he merged into the body of Vasudeva, and to get his body again, he was begotten in the womb of Rukmini by Lord Krishna himself. Thus he was born as the son of Krishna and celebrated by the name Pradyumna. Because he was begotten by Lord Krishna directly, his qualities were most similar to those of Lord Krishna. So this Pradyumna that's being worshipped in Ketumala, or this Kamadev, is quite mysterious. And we hear that he has a material body. I have to admit, I'm still a little bit confused about who he is, but according to what Prabhupada said in today's purport, he acts on the platform of Vishnu Tattva, and therefore he's offered all these prayers. And when I was going through all this research, I thought of how will I bring this to a conclusion, because it's so, well, it's quite technical, and it's quite abstract. But it was interesting. This morning, I was reading a little bit about Dhruva Maharaj, and how when Dhruva Maharaj killed the Yakshas, he was angry at one point because his brother had gotten killed. So he started killing the Yakshas for having killed his brother. His arrows sent them to the planet where all the very austere celibates end up, which is a very high planet in the material universe, beyond lust, actually. So then I was thinking how everything's so cohesive in the Bhagavatam. It might seem mysterious and bewildering, but it's all tied together. So Prabhupada was saying in the purport that even if one doesn't become an exalted devotee or an advanced transcendentalist, if one manages to be a celibate for one's whole lifetime, one can become very elevated. But then he said something even more interesting. Because you're thinking, okay, good luck in Kali Yuga. You know, how am I going to be able to manage that? But he said, the specific word they use is urdhva retasa, one who never discharges semen. So if one manages to go through one's whole life without discharging semen, one can go to this very high place. But then Prabhupada says, even more important than that is becoming a devotee. Because by becoming a devotee, one connects everything with Krishna. And by connecting everything with Krishna, including sex desire, then one can go to the highest planet, because those who go to this, which is Goloka Vrindavan, because those who go to this very high spiritual planet, they have to come back down again, because they haven't awakened their devotional love for Krishna. So even if one becomes very elevated in this material world, or even goes to the Brahman, which is a very high place to be, unless one connects positively with Krishna in a loving relationship, one is forced to try to find relationships in the material world. So this is the significance, that when one is advanced in devotional service, even if one is not able to live one's life as a complete celibate and one decides to get married, one agrees to act as a gentleman or a gentle lady and dovetail material desire in the service of the Lord, which is higher than being celibate without devotional service. And to confirm this, we hear a beautiful prayer by Jamunacharya in his Mukundamala Stotra. He says, O Cupid, abandon your residence in my mind, which is now the home of Lord Mukunda's lotus feet. You have already been incinerated by Lord Shiva's fiery glance, so why have you forgotten the power of Lord Murari's disc? Back to the disc. I guess that's why they're afraid of the disc in that planet. And I think at this time it's Ridhananda Maharshi. This is a bold challenge to Cupid, who can usually subdue everyone, including aspiring transcendentalists. As Lord Kapila says to his mother, just try to understand the mighty strength of my Maya in the shape of a woman who by the mere movement of her eyebrows can keep even the greatest conquerors of the world under her grip. Who remembers the classic example that Prabhupada often refers to? Yeah, Cleopatra. He didn't fault Cleopatra. He didn't say, oh, she's a low-class woman. He actually honored her, her potency, and then he urged, become advanced in spiritual life so you don't fall under the influence. So Prabhupada says, a devotee can challenge Kamadev, Cupid, in such a feisty way, not Prabhupada, sorry, Ridhananda Maharaj, because devotees constantly meditate on Lord Krishna, who destroys Cupid's influence. Here, King Kulashekara is giving fair warning to, oh, I thought it was Jamunacharya, sorry, it's King Kulashekara, to Kamadev to leave the king's mind or risk destruction for a second time. The reference here is an incident in which Kamadev tried to shoot his arrows at Lord Shiva to arouse lust in him. Lord Shiva retaliated by burning Kamadev to ashes with his glance. Kamadev should have learned his lesson from that incident. If not, King Kulashekara warns that Lord Krishna will have no trouble destroying Kamadev with his disc and freeing his devotee's mind of lust. So it seems that this is why the ladies get a little nervous, because this disc has some... Because we read that in this planet where Kamadev is being worshipped, that the daughters of the Prajapati there, when they see the disc of the Lord, they have miscarriages. They become so afraid. So Kamadev is also called Madan, a name that means one who attracts. But Lord Krishna is known as Madan Mohan, the bewilderer of Cupid. In other words, Krishna is so transcendentally attractive that anyone who absorbs his mind in him will not be troubled by sex desire. Furthermore, Lord Krishna's consort, Srimati Radharani, is called Madan Mohan Mohini, because she alone can captivate even Krishna. In all the world's religions, ascetics have practiced renunciation, and Kamadev always tests them and gives them trouble. Often, despite one's best attempt at purification, one thinks of the opposite sex at the time of death. Then one has to come back in the cycle of birth and death to be again attracted and again suffer the miseries of material life. Even the powerful mystic Vishvamitra became a victim of the beauty of Menaka, united with her and begot Shakuntala. But the bhaktas had discovered an infallible shelter from Cupid, absorption in the beauty of Krishna. One who is captivated by the beauty of Krishna is not victimized by lust. And there's a very famous prayer by Jamunacharya, Yadavadi mama chitta Krishna pararavinde nava navara sadamanyu chitam rantum ashit taravadi patanari sankame smaryamane bhavati mukha vikara shushtu nishtivanam cha. Since my mind has been engaged in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, and I have been enjoying ever new transcendental pleasure in that service, whenever I think of sex with a woman, my face at once turns from it and I spit at the thought. So it's not that they think of women in a bad way, but they just realize that advancement in spiritual life and in one's relationship with Krishna gives so much happiness that one is not inclined to self-centered enjoyment anymore. Actually, one feels restricted and imprisoned by it, because one can, if one chooses for material enjoyment, one cannot enjoy the happiness that Krishna, or the happiness of facilitating the relationship between Radha and Krishna. But even a householder in Krishna consciousness who has children and who has a wife and who is absorbed in Krishna consciousness can be attracted to Krishna. So this is the great news. There's a nice book out, which is not completely in our line, but you've heard of this book, Jagyasaini. It's a book about, you've read it, Rupmanjari, I think, about Draupadi. Remember how she, it was a very interesting rendition of the Mahabharata from the viewpoint of Draupadi. She didn't want five husbands in this version. She didn't ask for five husbands. She wanted Arjuna, and Arjuna wanted her. And actually, initially, she was attracted to Krishna. But Krishna said, don't worry, I'm Narayan, and my expansion is Nara, and he's appeared as Arjuna. You marry him. And so she ended up marrying Arjuna, but she ended up having four other husbands, and she's thinking, I didn't sign up for this. And, you know, we think, wow, if you have one Mahabhagavat for a husband, how great that would be. But if you had five, then your chances of going back to Godhead are like, no problem. But actually, it was quite complicated for her to keep all these men satisfied. There were great Mahabharatas, there were great Maharajas, great Kshatriyas. Anyway, in the end, she ended up, her relationship with Arjuna became perfect when both of them became very absorbed in Krishna. And they were no longer attracted to each other. That was, she got to a point, she was always frustrated because Arjuna was always going here and there, and he was obviously her favorite. But when they both became absorbed in Krishna, then there was no problem anymore. So this is the goal of every relationship, that our relationships all point towards our helping us to increase our attraction for Krishna. So that's just a solution that Prabhupada gave to us for the Cupid problem. Okay, you may not be able to transcend it given your background. I'm also hearing from Srila Prabhupada about what happened to Ajamil. Ajamil, he was Brahmana, he was very advanced, but he wasn't a perfect devotee, so he could get bewildered by Cupid. But when he finally realized that Krishna was, his relationship with Krishna was the most satisfying and most giving him the most happiness, he was able to leave all that behind. That Krishna was his well-wisher, that Krishna was the most merciful, and he didn't need to try to enjoy separately from Krishna, then he could go back to Godhead. So this relationship between the inhabitants of the planet of Ketumala, Varsha, is interesting. They have a relationship with the Lord and they worship the Lord, but they get nervous when the disc of the Lord comes around once a year. I don't quite understand it. It must be something very elevated, but the same principle remains that if we want to achieve the highest perfection, we have to go even beyond the influence of Cupid. We honor Cupid as an expansion of the Lord, but we want to partake in the transcendental relationship that's going on in the spiritual world between Krishna and his devotees. So these were some of my thoughts as I read through this verse. I hope it wasn't too boring or technical. If anybody would like to make a comment or a correction, ask a question, we can try to deal with it. I guess as the verses go on, we'll get more enlightened about who this Kamadev that they're worshipping will become more enlightened about who that person is, that particular expansion of the Lord. Any thoughts? Yes, Prabhu. So this is a story from another Purana, right? That Narada Muni got conquered. And this story, did you hear it from the Bhagavatam? It's good to know the source. Because I've heard something like this before, too. Okay. I'm not sure that this... See, we have heard about two categories of Kamadev here. We've heard that there's a demigod named Kamadev. And then there's the deity called Kamadev, which is residing in Ketumala Varsha. So I don't think that the expansion of... I don't think that that this particular expansion of Krishna became proud. It must have been the demigod. Would that make some sense to you? Can you say it a little more slowly? Yes, I admitted that I'm a little confused about this tattva. In this verse that we had today, we hear that Kamadeva is being worshipped on a particular planet, and that the other Kamadeva, who was a demigod, merged back into the body of Kamadeva. If I think of Kamadeva becoming proud, then I assume that it must have been the demigod who became proud. Did Narada Muni actually become bewildered?
No, he told that there is no sense for you
Yeah, everybody falls in love with Krishna, right? Even like when Ramachandra was going through the forest and there was all these sages there, the sages were in deep meditation. When they saw Ramachandra, they were surprised because they had a conjugal attraction for him, but they were in male bodies. So that wasn't quite appropriate. But they couldn't help it because he was so attractive. So then Ramachandra said, "Your desire will be fulfilled in a few million years." But they didn't mind. For them, time is very relative. They could just go into meditation and time would pass in a different dimension for them. They got to take birth as gopis. I don't know if anybody else has any answer to the point that you brought up. Does anybody else like to make a comment on that point? How could the only answer that I can suggest is that the Kamadev who became proud was the demigod and not the deity of Kamadev that's being worshipped here. I find this deity quite mysterious, to be honest with you. I would have to read further. Because I've read this section Hare Krishna. I've read this section before, and but you know, you read the Bhagavatam at different times, and then, like now I had to give a class, so it kind of jumps out at you. Sometimes you read mysterious things in the Bhagavatam, and you think, okay, I don't understand that now, maybe I'll understand it later. I still haven't understood it. This Hare Krishna Prabhu. This deity is very mysterious, this Kamadev. And then there's Prajumna. I just want to go back to the beginning. This Kamadev who appears as Krishna's son, so this is Prajumna, the same Kamadev that's being worshipped here, is Vishnu Tattva. How this is so is explained by Madhavacharya. Then he says, although this Kamadev is Vishnu Tattva, his body is not spiritual but material. Lord Vishnu as Prajumna or Kamadev accepts a material body, but he still acts spiritually. It's I'm still confused. How about you, Majari? Are you clear? Well, tomorrow, who's giving class? The person who gives class tomorrow hopefully will shed some more light on this. Because when we think of, like in the Christian tradition, they say that God accepted a material body, right? And but what happened to that material body? Okay, he got crucified. This one got burned to ashes. So it's, of course, that is what many times people who are atheists say, that when you can't explain something, you say it's inconceivable. But Prabhupada actually said in one purport that everything is inconceivable. Even the scientists, they think that they know what's going on in the world, but they can only study a small part of it. And then they feel like they're taking control, but they don't have control. It's obvious that they don't have control of it. So unless one is deeply absorbed in Krishna consciousness, one can't hope to understand even a little bit what's going on. In that regard, we remember that in the Bhagavatam and in other Vaishnava Shastras, when the Lord appears to a devotee, the devotee begins to say prayers to the Lord, in which the devotee understands everything about material and spiritual energy. They start, and you know, we've heard these things before, but we can understand that when the devotee says these prayers, he actually, at least while he's praying, he knows what's going on. But ultimately, in order to enter into an intimate relationship with the Lord, to be very intimate with the Lord, these aspects of the creation are not the most important thing for a devotee. The most important thing is the intimate relationship with the Lord. He's not so much interested in understanding how everything works. He's more interested in how he can be selflessly surrendered to the Lord's desires. And then when it's necessary, the Lord may enlighten him about how the material world is working or how the spiritual world is working. But the most important principle for the devotee is the relationship of love between him and the Lord. So I hope that that will rescue me from my dilemma that I can't really explain everything here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.